Hello, everyone, brothers and sisters, friends, guests. I bring with me the loving greetings from those that are in the Denver, Colorado Ecclesia. We talked about last night in the lecture, our brother David, about he had mentioned how we can show that the Bible is true and that we have to make sure that we know that it's true before we can have any belief in it or do anything that it says. And so that serves as an introduction, and we're going to delve into that a little bit deeper tonight. So some of the things that we want to talk about tonight is the veracity of the Bible. How can we tell that the Bible is true? How can we test it out? Well, we also need to look at its source, the need of it, and the testing of prophecy. We're gonna use a couple of examples of prophecy. The first will be Nebuchadnezzar's dream, which we've been studying about this week. And the second is the nation of Israel. And I just chose a couple of these examples, but there are many others that we could have chosen. And then we'll see what conclusions we can draw from that. Now, there's different ways that we can verify the veracity of the Bible. We can use some of these ways to verify anything that we want to prove. We could use archaeology. We could, dig up evidence of things that have happened in the past. We can use science. Of course, with that, we run the risk of man and his possibility of making mistakes in trying to prove things. There have been many ancient manuscripts found, and that can be of help also in proving that the Bible is true. And finally, we can use prophecy. Now, there is prophecy in the Bible, but we don't want to use the Bible to prove that the Bible is true, because that would not be a valid method. So, we read in Isaiah chapter 42, verse 8, that prophecy has a divine source. There are many prophets throughout the Bible, but they are all used by God so that He can deliver His message. So we read in Isaiah 42, verse 8, "I am the Lord, that is my name, and my glory I will not give to another, neither my praise to graven images. Behold, the former things are come to pass, and new things do I declare. Before they spring forth, I tell you of them." So this shows that God is the author of these prophecies, and He uses prophets as a tool to deliver His message. We read in 2 Peter chapter 1, verse 19, "We have also a more sure word of prophecy, whereunto ye do well that ye take heed, as unto a light that shineth in a dark place, until the day dawn and the day star arise in your hearts, knowing this first, that no prophecy of the Scripture is of any private interpretation. For the prophecy came not in old time by the will of man, but holy men of God spake as they were moved by the Holy Spirit." So this shows not only the divine source of prophecy, but the importance of it. We can also note a few things about prophecy, that there were dozens of prophecies fulfilled in the Scriptures. As I said, I'm going to talk about a couple tonight, but there are dozens and dozens that we could find throughout Scriptures. And we'll also find, as we study the Bible more and more, and we'll try to show how these prophecies were fulfilled on these two subjects, we can see that all of these prophecies either have been fulfilled or will be fulfilled. And some of these were written hundreds or even thousands of years before they came to pass. But we won't use the argument, as I said, of using the Bible to prove the Bible. But I say yet, because once we can prove that the Bible is true and the prophets, the things that they prophesied about came true, or at least some of them came true, then we can use that to show that the Bible probably is true and that the things that have not yet come to pass will come to pass. So I'd like to set up some criteria in testing Bible prophecy. And we can take these two prophecies that we're going to talk about tonight and run them through these tests. First of all, we want to make sure that this prophecy was written before the thing that it's prophesying happened. Obviously, if something already happened, then it wouldn't be a prophecy, and you couldn't really say the Bible is a great thing, you know, that has prophecies if it's already happened. It also has to be something that could not be anticipated. If I see that it's cloudy and windy and there's, you know, dark clouds out, it's probably not really a prophecy for me to say, I think it's going to rain. There needs to be specific events. There can't be something vague and that, you know, you could say, well, that's a lucky guess, or you know, that's not really specific enough. That's not really a prophecy. And finally, and probably one of the most important things, is that the prophecy can be verified through historical evidence. And as I said, not using the Bible. So here's a timeline. I'm not sure how clearly you can see that, but what I have outlined there is basically when the books of the Bible were written. And so when we look at Daniel's prophecy, we can see that he lived at about B.C. 610, and that some of his prophecies were to take place as late as A.D. 493. And these are the ones that actually did come to pass. They came to pass as late as A.D. 493. So that's 1,000 years later. Now, the particular prophecy that we're going to look at is something that we've already discussed in some of the study classes, and it's Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon. He had a dream, but he couldn't remember what the dream was, much less what it meant. And so Daniel volunteered to come forward after praying to God, and he said he would say what the dream was, and also the interpretation. So we'll go ahead and read through this quickly. And this is just going to be what Daniel said in response. And it's in Daniel chapter 2, starting at verse 31. Thou, O king, sawest, and behold, a great image. This great image, whose brightness was excellent, stood before thee, and the form thereof was terrible. This image's head was of fine gold, his breast and his arms of silver, his belly and his thighs of brass, his legs of iron, his feet part of iron and part of clay. Thou sawest till that a stone was cut out without hands, which smote the image upon his feet that were of iron and clay, and brake them to pieces. Then was the iron, the clay, the brass, the silver, and the gold broken to pieces together, became like the chaff of the summer threshing floors. And the wind carried them away, that no place was found for them. And the stone that smote the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. This is the dream, and we will tell the interpretation thereof before the king. Thou, O king, art king of kings, for the God of heaven hath given thee a kingdom, power and strength and glory. And wheresoever the children of men dwell, the beasts of the field and the fowls of the heaven hath he given into thine hand. And he hath made thee ruler over them all. Thou art this head of gold. And after thee shall arise another kingdom, inferior to thee, and another third kingdom of brass, which shall bear rule over all the earth. And the fourth kingdom shall be strong as iron, forasmuch as iron breaketh in pieces and subdueth all things, and as iron that breaketh in these shall it break in pieces and bruise. And whereas thou sawest the feet and toes, part of potter's clay and part of iron, the kingdom shall be divided, but there shall be in it of the strength of the iron, forasmuch as thou sawest the iron mixed with miry clay. And as the toes of the feet were part of iron and part of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. Whereas thou sawest iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave one to another, even as iron is not mixed with clay. And in the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom, which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. For as much as thou sawest that the stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, and that it brake in pieces the iron, the brass, the clay, the silver, and the gold, the great God hath made known to the king what shall come to pass hereafter. And the dream is certain, and the interpretation thereof sure. So this is a little chart that may not be the easiest to read, but I will. What it has is three columns. One is where it refers to in scriptures of Nebuchadnezzar's dream. The second column refers to its interpretation, and then the third column of any other comments. So we'll just kind of be referring to these as we go through each of these kingdoms. And what we hope to show is that each of these kingdoms did exist, and that this prophecy was correct. It did come true. So first, if we look at the first kingdom, was that of the gold. And this is a different translation, but it says in verse 31, "You looked, O king, and there before you stood a large statue, an enormous, dazzling statue, awesome in appearance." The interpretation of that was, this was the dream, and now we'll interpret to the king. "You, O king, are the king of kings. The God of heaven has given you dominion and power and might and glory. In your hands he has placed mankind and beasts of the field and the birds of the air. Wherever they live, he has made you ruler over them all." So when he says the head of the statue is made of pure gold, the interpretation was, you are that head of gold. So this is not really a prophecy, because this is talking about the same time in which Daniel and Nebuchadnezzar were living. So here's an artist's interpretation of what this might have looked like to Nebuchadnezzar. It shows the head of gold and the arms of silver and so forth. And we'll refer back to this. We'll cover all of these sections. And what we hope to show is that each of these sections did apply to a certain kingdom, and that kingdom did exist. So that head of gold symbolized Babylon. Nebuchadnezzar was that head of gold. And Babylon was known for gold. The city was of gold. It was a golden age. It was a golden time. So it was very fitting that that head of gold would represent Babylon. And as we said, the prophecy begins really after this. This is the current time. This sets up the prophecy. Now the end of that kingdom was in B.C. 542, and his son Belshazzar, that was the end of his reign. And we'll note that in the prophecy there were several metals mentioned, and that is also significant in showing that which kingdoms were represented in each of these metals. So gold is the heaviest of the four metals. It's valuable, and yet vulnerable. And we can see that this was exactly what the kingdom of Babylon was like. It was vulnerable, and it eventually did cease to become the head kingdom of the world. It was taken over. So this was kind of the area that's in kind of the green and yellow crosshatched part of it. That's the Babylonian kingdom about 550 BC. And really the important part in showing these maps is just, I'm showing that it's the same land, and that will become significant, but it's basically around the same area of land. So if we move on, the next kingdom says its chest and arms were of silver, its belly and thighs of, well, it's just its chest and arms of silver. That's the next kingdom. And the interpretation was, after you, another kingdom will arise inferior to yours. So if we look a little bit more at the breast and arms of silver, after the kingdom of Babylon, as we said in BC 536, the Babylonian kingdom was superseded by a joint kingdom of the Medes and the Persians. Now the silver was also significant because it said there was going to be a lesser kingdom. It's represented by silver, which is of less value and inferior to gold. So that fits the prophecy. It also applies to the Medes and the Persians. Because of their joint reigning, they were not nearly as strong as Nebuchadnezzar was, a single king, a single dictator. The Medes and the Persians also, their tribute and their taxes were paid in silver. And as I said, that it was a weaker kingdom. Didn't have a single dictator like Nebuchadnezzar or Belshazzar. It did last longer, but it was still a weaker kingdom. And note also that there were two arms of silver, and that corresponded to the two arms of the kingdom, the Medes, the Medo side and the Persian side. And we'll see also that it consisted of a little bit more land area. And if we look here, it's kind of the burnt orange and the little bit lighter orange sections. So it's a little bit, we can see it was a little bit more land that it covered. Now if we go on to the third kingdom, it says its belly and thighs were of bronze. And Daniel's interpretation was, next, a third kingdom, one of bronze, will rule over the whole earth. So again, this is saying that there will be a new kingdom, that the Medo-Persian Empire would be overthrown. And this occurred in BC 334. The Greek Empire became the strongest empire, and it took over this area of land. And the ruler was Alexander of Macedon, or better known as Alexander the Great. Now this kingdom was also noted for yet a different metal, that of brass, and it was even less valuable. We can note that it was also part of the warrior's armor, was the brass. And this was even less valuable, and we could see it was probably even less weaker because it was divided into four kingdoms. Now, as I said, we were talking about this one specific section of land, and two of these four kingdoms were in this land that we're referring to, the land of Canaan, or the Promised Land. And so that is why it's referred to as the two brazen thighs. And as history would show, it turned out to be there was a north and a south side. And these were the two kingdoms that were part of this land. And again, we can see that brass now is even a less valuable mineral than silver. So we've gone from gold to silver to brass. So we can see is this is really quite a large section of land, but as I said, we're really talking about the two kingdoms over in this area. Now, as we go on to the fourth kingdom, it said that the image had legs of iron. And Daniel's interpretation was that there would be a fourth kingdom strong as iron. For iron breaks and smashes everything, and as iron breaks things to pieces, so it will crush and break all the others. So once again, this implies that there was another kingdom that took over the previous kingdom. It was not a joint running of that area. So if we look in detail at the legs of iron, well, the next thing that happened in history was the Roman Empire. And both of these kingdoms that we talked about, the north and the south, they succumbed to the rule of the Romans. And this was at B.C. 67 on the north side of the kingdom and B.C. 30 on the southern side. And once again, we see that iron now is even less valuable. We also know that the Romans were especially known for their use of iron. So this is an excellent way to show how these kingdoms really go with that prophecy because of all these metals that are mentioned. Rome was divided into an Eastern and a Western Empire. And notice in the image that it talks about the two legs of iron. That shows, that represents both the Eastern and the Western empires. Now we can see the Roman Empire is kind of in all this kind of tannish orange area. And there's Rome right here in the center. So next in the image, we talk about its feet. It said it had legs of iron. Its feet were partly of iron and partly of baked clay. And so the interpretation was that just as you saw the feet and toes, the kingdom were partly of baked clay and partly of iron, even as you saw iron mixed with clay. And the toes were partly iron and partly clay, and just as you saw the iron mixed with baked clay, any more than iron mixes with clay. So this will be a divided kingdom. Yet it will have some of the strength of iron in it, so this kingdom will be partly strong and partly brittle. So the people will be a mixture and will not remain united. And we can see that that's exactly what happened. 10 kingdoms appeared shortly after the Roman Empire. And they were not strongly allied, but they did occupy that same land that we've been referring to. Some of these 10 were strong, and some of them were weak, representing the iron and the clay. And note that there were 10 that can be readily mentioned, and that goes along with the 10 toes. And so the whole of the empire was divided at this point. It was not strong. It was not united, just as was prophesied. And at this time, which was about AD 493, we can see there were 10 kingdoms. And these represent the 10 toes of the image. And so here's a map that shows most of these kingdoms and where basically they occupied this area of land. Now it's interesting to note in a book called Helpless Israel by John Thomas, in 1848, this area was occupied by 10 other kingdoms. Now notice the same area of land. It's not exactly corresponding to the other 10 in area, one nation to at that time versus one nation some 1,400 years later. But we can see that through history, this area changed hands quite a bit, and we've already shown that, and it continued to happen. But from this time on, there always seemed to be a core of about 10 nations, or the 10-toed kingdoms. Now, many of the nations in this area eventually were represented in the European Union. But the important thing to note here is not so much the 10 that to make sure that we can at any time find exactly 10, the main thing to realize here is that back in AD 493, this is when the prophecy was fulfilled. But it's just interesting to note that through this time, there always seems to be around 10 nations occupying this land. So I just wanted to note that many of these kingdoms no longer exist, or some were incorporated with others. And as we said, that European Union was formed in 1993. And as I said, it also, you know, it represents many of these ten-toed kingdoms. I just want to stress that this prophecy was fulfilled, and it was really back then. So it's not, it wouldn't be a logical or fair argument to say that the prophecy did not come to pass because there's not 10 kingdoms there today. So this is just a summary. And this kind of recaps all the times that we just talked about. And this table is a little bit different. The column on the left shows the division that we have been talking about in chapter 2. But there's also, as we said, there was all kinds of prophecies. Well, there's actually two more prophecies of this exact set of kingdoms mentioned in Daniel chapter 7 and also Daniel chapter 8. Okay, so now that we've gone through this, we need to apply our test, the criterion that we stated earlier, to see, is this a valid prophecy? Well, was it written before the event? Well, we know that Daniel was written. We noted the year of that, and it was when the Babylonian kingdom started. All the other kingdoms were after that, up to 1,000 years later. So the prophecy was definitely written before these kingdoms took place. Could he have anticipated this? Well, because of that length of time, it seems highly unlikely. You know, if you could see a kingdom that was, you know, just about to take over and you could see their strength mounting, then yeah, maybe you could anticipate that something like that might happen. But you certainly couldn't have anticipated all these kingdoms up to 1,000 years later. Were there specific events? And the answer to that is yes, because each of these kingdoms were definitely, you know, the specific rulers at that time, and they ruled that land. And can it be verified through historical evidence, not the Bible? Well, it can be found in history books, and not the Bible, but just through history references, that these kingdoms did exist. And that's when they existed. And these were the materials that they were known for. So it does indeed pass all of these criteria. So we'll leave that for a second, and I'll talk about the second prophecy that we mentioned earlier, and that's the regathering of Israel. Now, I thought that might be something, you know, that would be a good choice, because we know that the nation of Israel indeed became a nation, and so the Jews did start regathering, and I think that's common knowledge. But I wanted to see in scriptures, was that prophesied? And of course, I knew it had been prophesied, but I didn't know how easy it would be for me to find verses, and I found dozens and dozens of verses. So again, that shows the importance of it. If we see something in the scriptures mentioned many times, it must be a very important subject. And so the prophecy is that Israel was a scattered people and that they were going to be regathered. So we read in Isaiah 11:12, "He shall set up an ensign for the nation and shall assemble the outcasts of Israel, and gather together the dispersed of Judah from the four corners of the earth." And in Isaiah 14, verse 1, "For the Lord will have mercy on Jacob and will yet choose Israel and set them in their own land. And the stranger shall be joined with them, and they shall cleave to the house of Jacob. Isaiah 27, verse 6. He shall cause them that come of Jacob to take root. Israel shall blossom and bud, and fill the face of the world with fruit. Isaiah 43, 5. Fear not, for I am with thee. I will bring thy seed from the east and gather thee from the west. And I will say to the north, give up, and to the south, keep not back. Bring my sons from far and my daughters from the ends of the earth. And in Jeremiah chapter 23, therefore, behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that they shall no more say, the Lord liveth, which brought up the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt. But the Lord liveth, which brought up and which led the seed of the house of Israel out of the north country, and from all countries whither I have driven them, and they shall dwell in their own land. In their own land. Jeremiah 31:10. Hear the word of the Lord, O ye nations, and declare it in the isles afar off. And say, he that scattered Israel will gather him, and keep him as a shepherd doth his flock. Nehemiah. Remember, I beseech thee, the word that thou commandest thy servant Moses, saying, if ye transgress, I will scatter you abroad among the nations. And we know that that's what happened. But he also says, if ye turn unto me and keep my commandments and do them, though there were of you cast out unto the uttermost part of the heaven, yet will I gather thee from thence, and will bring them unto the place that I have chosen to set my name there. Psalms 147. The Lord doth build up Jerusalem. He gathereth together the outcasts of Israel. Amos 9:14. I will bring again the captivity of my people Israel, and they shall build the way cities and inhabit them. They shall plant vineyards and drink the wine thereof, and they shall also make gardens and eat the fruit of them. Zephaniah 3:19. Behold, at that time I will undo all that afflict thee, and I will save her that halteth, and gather her that was driven out, and I will get them praise and fame in every land where they have been put to shame. Ezekiel 39. Therefore thus saith the Lord God, now will I bring again the captivity of Jacob, and have mercy upon the whole house of Israel, and will be jealous for my holy name. After that they have borne their shame and all their trespasses, whereby they have trespassed against me, when they dwelt safely in their land, and none made them afraid. When I brought them again from the people, and gathered them out of their enemies' lands, and am sanctified in them, in the sight of many nations, then shall they know that I am the Lord their God, which caused them to be led into captivity among the heathen. But I have gathered them unto their own land, and have left none of them any more there. Well, did this happen? We see from all these verses, and we can see that these happened, these prophecies over hundreds of years by different prophets, and yet they all came from the scriptures. God told them, as we read earlier, what to say. He's the one that inspired them to make these prophecies. Well, we know that it did happen. I have some information about the scattering and the regathering, but here is probably one of the most important events that's happened in certainly the last 60, 70 years. Israel became a nation. And this document that's in this picture here was the proclamation of the establishing of Israel to be a state, a nation. It's interesting to note what the reaction was there. On May 14, 1948, the Jewish People's Council met at the Tel Aviv Museum and announced the creation of the State of Israel. But what happened? It was immediately challenged. It said, the declaration read that this right is the natural right of the Jewish people to be masters of their own fate, like all other nations, in their own sovereign state. The new country created at the museum that day was the first modern Jewish state, and its birth ended British colonial rule over Palestine, according to to the Israel Ministry of Foreign Affairs. The next day, Egypt, Syria, Lebanon, Jordan, all land in this area that we've been looking at, attacked the fledgling country. Over 15 months of fighting, Israel expanded the territory apportioned to it by the United Nations. And it's really happened, this unrest, it happened right away, and it's really never stopped. There's been unrest in this area ever since then. And we know it will never stop until Christ returns. I'll do just some, these are non-biblical statistics that will prove that the Jews did indeed begin to gather to Israel. And so this shows the Jewish population and what the percentages were that lived in Israel. So we can see in 1882, 92% were non-Jewish. So that really shows how the Jews that were there had been scattered. Yeah, we can see in 1948 is the key time when they became that nation that the Jews did return. So that the non-Jewish population there was down to 17%. So another way to look at this is, we can see that the Jews returned there, but how much of the Jews really gathered? What percentage of the Jews in the world now are living here? So we can see in 1882, basically 0%, or hardly measurable. And then in 1948 and beyond, well, if we just go down, it's really just kept increasing. By 2008, 41% of the Jewish population lived in Israel. So let's talk about this. Test out this prophecy. Well, was it written before the event? We could certainly say that the gathering happened after the event was prophesied. All of these prophecies were before Christ, and we can see that the gathering happened much, much later and culminated in 1948. Could that have been anticipated? Again, because of the passage of time and the fact that the Jews were scattered over all corners of the earth, that could not have been anticipated, that they would all gather into this small place. Well, we see that day in May in 1948, a very specific event. And of course, this was verified not with the Bible, but with statistics, with census taking, and with historical evidence. What conclusions can we draw? We see that the Bible has prophecies which have come to pass from historical evidence. Does this not give credence to all the other prophecies it contains? It certainly does. It gives credibility. Just as we deal with people and we see that they can be trusted from our experiences with them, we can kind of count on that we can trust them in the future and in other ways. And the Bible is no different than that kind of logic. We can see, and we could pick up many other prophecies and show that they indeed have come to pass. And the more that we do that, the more we can see that the Bible is indeed true. Now, what can we do with that? If it does have credence, if we look at enough prophecies and we can look places other than the Bible and show that they came true, then we can now study and believe in other prophecies whose fulfillment is documented in the Bible. And we can also believe in the prophecies that have yet to come to pass. Knowing that all these other prophecies have, there's no reason to believe that these other ones will also come to pass. So regarding the prophecy of Israel, there are really still events yet to come. All of Israel is not not made up of Jews. All of Israel has not been regathered. There still has to be one more event, and that event is also very specific, and it's the return of Christ. Now, this is a future prophecy. There is going to be a future kingdom. It's going to be in that area. Now, regarding Daniel's prophecy, we hadn't yet talked about the stone. And the reason is because that is still future. If we look back to our image, we see at the bottom there was a stone cut out without hands. That stone was to topple the image. Well, if we read back to that in Daniel, it says, "In the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever." Well, that certainly has not happened. We don't see one kingdom over there. "For as much as thou sawest that the stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, that it break in pieces the iron, the brass, the clay, the silver, and the gold, the great God hath made known to the king what shall come to pass hereafter, and the dream is certain, and the interpretation thereof is sure." It's interesting to note there that also toppled not just the 10 toes, but it mentions that it toppled everything. It toppled the gold, the silver, the brass, the clay, the iron. And this is significant because it talks about a kingdom that will be nothing like any other kingdom. All these other kingdoms had similarities. They were run by man. They had problems. They had weaknesses. And they eventually were taken over by other kingdoms, and that still continues to this day. So it's important to note that this is signifying a kingdom that's not made by man, but by God. Now, this will be kind of a lead-in to what Brother Sid will talk about tomorrow in the kingdom, in the fulfillment of this prophecy. But here's an example of prophecy that we can show has been fulfilled, at least in part, and we can have confidence that the rest of that prophecy will also be fulfilled. Now, in closing, I just want to look at another prophecy that we read about tonight. It says, "For the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but after their own lust shall they heap to themselves teachers, having itching ears. And they shall turn away their ears from the truth, and shall be turned unto fables." So I'd like to urge everyone to look over these prophecies. We can see how important they are. Verify to yourselves. Don't take my word for it. Look through the Bible and see. Use these tests that we've come up with. Verify that they indeed have come to pass. And strengthen your faith that these future prophecies will also come to pass. But we must look to the Bible. We can see there's a prophecy that there will be those that do not look to the Bible, and I think we can look around us and see that that is happening. We read in Revelations, "Behold, I come quickly. Blessed is he that keepeth the sayings of the prophecy of this book. Blessed is he that readeth, and they that hear the words of this prophecy, and keep those things which are written therein. For the time is at hand." And also that we read tonight, look at Paul's confidence. He watched these prophecies. He saw them come to pass. He had absolute faith and conviction and confidence that the future things will also come to pass. "But watch thou in all things, endure afflictions, do the work of an evangelist, make full proof of thy ministry. For I am now ready to be offered, and the time of my departure is at hand. I have fought a good fight, I have finished my course, I have kept the faith. Henceforth there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give me at that day, and that day is that future kingdom. And not to me only, but unto all them also that love his appearing. Let us also look forward in love and be ready for his appearing and the setting up of that grand and glorious kingdom.